Today is Friday, October 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. presidential election is but 11 days away, but what kind of harm might comments like this by Donald Trump on conceding the election if he loses have on the country?
I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Also ahead, we will take you to a pipeline protest by Native Americans in North Dakota. It's all on today's International Edition. The U.S. presidential election is winding down. Both Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are on seemingly endless journeys to states whose voters reportedly are hanging in the balance. There is still discussion ongoing from the third and final debate between the two. Comedian Stephen Colbert was particularly interested in a question asked Donald Trump by the debate's moderator, Chris Wallace of Fox News. Now, keep in mind that the laughter you hear comes not from the debate itself, but from those sitting in the audience of Colbert's late-night TV program on CBS.
The definitive moment of the evening, of the election, of the American experiment, came when Chris Wallace asked Donald Trump if he would accept the results of the election on November 8th. And Trump had this to say.
Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm sorry, what's the word?
That's horrifying.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I was like, I want to make sure I heard that correctly. Jimmy, can I hear that one more time?
I'll keep you in suspense.
Oh, suspense. Democracy is going to end with a cliffhanger. I guess we're all going to have to wait until November 9th to find out if we still have a country. If Donald Trump is in the mood for a peaceful transfer of power.
Well, joining us in studio is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Sure, it's funny, Jim, but Trump's comments during that debate, along with some comments from Hillary Clinton, could lead some to question what kind of effect this campaign, a very contentious campaign, will have on the country following the election. What's in your crystal ball on this?
You hate
that question, don't you?
Well, no, look, we're in the very final days of a very long, contentious, divisive debate in this country. The most negative, the most divisive presidential campaign that I can remember in memory. It has calmed down in the last few days a little bit. I will say this. There seems to be a settling in the polls. Clinton's ahead. Trump is not, out of the picture. He's within striking distance. But you also get the sense that things are settling. The voters are now deciding. And in fact, in 37 states, they're voting. So the process is ongoing. I think there is some apprehension about post-election. And, some of this could be remedied by the margin of victory for one candidate or the other. If it's clear-cut, it may be harder to kind of question results and incite followers and that kind of thing. We'll have to see how it goes. But you know what? Win, lose, or draw for both of these candidates, no matter who wins, the post-election healing challenge is going to be huge.
How important is that in this country?
I think it's going to be extremely important after this long, divisive election. This country's been politically polarized for decades, but it's just coming into ever sharper focus. And we had a campaign where, especially on one side, one candidate, Mr. Trump, often would refer to groups of people, sometimes disparagingly. He says he didn't intend anything by it, but it came across that way. And as Hillary Clinton would say, that in her view, that was divisive rhetoric. So we have a lot of healing to do to pull the country together. But, the first step is we have to get to the election and through the election and hope that most Americans are willing to accept the outcome.
But the worry here is that the campaigns themselves have caused some people to become so marginalized that the anger might take over to do things we can't even conceive of.
You know, we hear some talk right now, particularly coming from some of the Trump followers, but hopefully it's just talk. We've heard some of this in the past from one side or the other. It does seem to be ramped up a bit. The loyalists to Donald Trump are very loyal. There's no doubt about that. He's expecting them to come out. I think one of the problems strategically for the Trump campaign is they are looking to boost the number of white working class voters, and that will carry him to victory. But there's just very little evidence in the polling data and in projections that that's even possible. So he is going around saying the polls are wrong, and we'll all find out on November 8th. And indeed, we will.
How good are these polls? Do you have questions about the polls?
Well, you know, polls should be taken as an indicator. I think they should often be taken in aggregate, not isolated. And you look for trends. And one trend we can note, and I think this was the pivotal moment in the campaign, was from the first debate on, Hillary Clinton, it was very narrow lead there, maybe 2 points over Trump. Since that time, the lead has gone up. It's now at a 5-6 margin on average. I think it will be shown that the three debates are going to be the pivotal moment here. The face-to-face confrontation that allowed voters to take their measure of the two candidates head-to-head.
Let's see what social media is saying about all of this. Andrew Palcheski joins us, as he does every week. What do you see?
Well, we're seeing a lot of what Jim is talking about with the polls as indicators being taken by the supporters as gospel, as people saying, well, Donald Trump's going to win Florida because this new poll says he's up by 2 or 4 points, or, oh, Hillary's obviously going to win this swing state because she's up. So rather than being seen as indicators, they're kind of taking those and just running with them, using them to try to galvanize their support. And then on both sides, you see these issues that come up on a day-to-day basis and kind of they grab them and they run with them. So today, it's the issue of Hillary Clinton's email, things that have been leaked between her staffers talking back and forth, as we've seen over the past couple weeks, the WikiLeaks emails. It's, hashtag Podesta email 19 or Podesta email 20, referring to John Podesta, her campaign chairman.
Especially Trump, but a lot of other people are saying that the media has been unfair, giving far more negative coverage to Trump than to Hillary Clinton. How is that reflected in social media?
I think you'd find a lot of Trump supporters who say that, but also a lot of studies that have come out and said that a lot of the coverage has been more negative towards Donald Trump, and just even more of the coverage has been focused on Donald Trump. Now, that being said, you sell a lot more ad time or a lot more web ads and clicks if it's an exciting story about something that Donald Trump has said versus maybe something that's less exciting that Hillary Clinton has said. So I think that's part of the kind of coverage bias that we see. And we've talked about this in the newsroom, that there tends to be, you know, even now, even though Hillary Clinton is pretty well ahead, I think in the electoral count, it looks like she's well above the 270. It's still this back and forth horse race coverage. So a lot of people talking about that on social media, how not just the issues are being covered and talked about in the campaigns, but how the media is covering them as well.
And Jim, just quickly, I mean, what there is talk in our newsroom and every other newsroom in this country about how it's being covered. How do you see it?
Well, I noticed that the Trump people are now focused on the online comments. They're saying, well, it's 3-1 in favor of Trump. And they're also looking at the measure of yard signs, which, you know, probably not the best scientific indicators in both cases. There'll be a lot of media examination. But also, Trump loves the media limelight. And that has been what aided him in the primaries. And it may contribute, if he's not able to win, it may contribute to his downfall in the general election.
That's Jim Malone. Andrew Palcheski joins us as well. I thank you both for being with us.
Sure.
This is International Edition. Among the stories in the world, the UN says Islamic State has used tens of thousands of people as human shields in and near the city of Mosul. Reports say rebels started a counteroffensive in the Syrian city of Aleppo. In the final stretch of the U.S. presidential campaign, the Trump campaign Friday downplayed federal filings showing Hillary Clinton with an $85 million cash advantage. The UN resolution calls for a ban on nuclear weapons. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
New research is suggesting dogs can understand humans much more than had been thought. A study published in the journal Science shows that dogs have the ability to process words and the inflections of human speech in a way similar to people. The researchers say their studies show that learning vocabulary may not be something that's exclusively a human ability. To see if dogs react to a word's intonation more than its actual meaning, the researchers played them recordings of their trainers speaking words of praise or just some random word. The trainers would use a praising voice and then a neutral intonation when speaking both types of words. The researchers found that in spite of vocal intonation, the dogs could recognize each word as distinct and unique. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Protests were reported to be relatively calm in the U.S. state of North Dakota Friday, following a day that turned violent between police and demonstrators opposing the construction of an oil pipeline across what police say is private property that has been occupied by Native Americans. Joining us just north of Cannonball, South Carolina, is Jason Patinkin. And Jason, you've been covering this for a little while now. What is the situation now as you see it?
Right now there's about 50 or 60, 50 to 100 protesters who are lined up across a bridge. And about 50 feet in front of them is a line of concrete barricades that the police have set up. The police are armed. They're in what look like armored military vehicles. The protesters are standing here in front of a couple of burned out dump trucks that were set on fire last night. And so there's a bit of a tense standoff right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, your transmission is breaking up. But explain a little bit to people who really have not been keeping up with this what happened last night.
So yesterday, the police came down, more than 100 police, heavily armed, with their armored vehicles, and they swept through a protest camp that had been set up to block the construction of an oil pipeline. They took down tents. They took down teepees. There were arrests. There was use of mace and some what looked like smoke bang grenades. It was a difficult scene for the protesters. They were pushed back a couple miles to a bridge here, and that is where the current front line is between the protesters and the police.
Well, you know, the reporting is that the protests are relatively calm, but you're painting a picture for us right now of still a pretty high level of tension. Is that correct?
Yes, there is a very high level of tension right now. The police have are armed. They've threatened the protesters with arrest. Fire's burning next to me. So it is definitely a tense scene, and we're not exactly sure what will happen next.
What is the point of contention here? Just the pipeline itself? And if so, what is it? And what is the status of that pipeline?
So the pipeline would cross, as it's currently planned, would cross the Missouri River just north of the Standing Rock Reservation. And the Native tribe asserts that that would endanger their water supply. So they're trying to stop the construction of the pipeline. But this is taken on much more significance than one pipeline and one water source. This has brought together hundreds of Native tribes from across the country in a resurgency that hasn't been seen in decades among Native people.
That is Jason Patinkin reporting to us here on International Edition from just north of Cannonball in South Dakota. Jason, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jason thanked me, and he was too polite to say that I had mislocated him. Cannonball is in North Dakota, not in South Dakota, or as I earlier said, in South Carolina. Sometimes these type of things happen on Fridays, and I greatly apologize to you. This is VOA, and I think we have a promo break here coming up. Can we do that? Let's do it. This is VOA.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
VOA Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This is International Edition on VOA. We continue. Syrian rebels, including jihadists, counterattacked the army and its allies on Friday, aiming to break a weeks-long siege on northeastern Aleppo, according to insurgent sources. The assault, employing heavy shelling and suicide car bombs, was mainly focused on the city's western edge by rebels based in the countryside outside Aleppo. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, that's a British-based war monitor, said more than 15 civilians had been killed and 100 wounded by rebel shelling of government-held western Aleppo. Staff media reported that 5 civilians had been killed. Now, this grinding war in Syria this week registered a new low when the United Nations reported that an airstrike that killed dozens of students and teachers was the deadliest attack on a school in nearly 6 years of fighting. The UN Special Envoy for Education, Gordon Brown, called for the UN Security Council to refer the attack on the school in Idlib, Syria, to the International Criminal Court for investigation. There's a new film coming out from director Mel Gibson, which tells the story of a World War II Army medic who won the Medal of Honor during one of the world's bloodiest battles. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about Hacksaw Ridge.
This is a personal gift from the United States government designed to bring death to the enemy.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I can't touch a gun.
You don't kill.
No, sir.
You know, quite a bit of killing does occur in war.
Private Doss does not believe in violence. Do not look to him to save you on the battlefield.
Desmond Doss was a Seventh-day Adventist who believed that his faith forbade him from harming another human being. Doss had wanted to be a doctor, but when World War II started, he joined the Army. Doss's unit was involved in the Battle of Okinawa in 1945, and it was there that he distinguished himself by saving the lives of 75 of his comrades while risking his own life under enemy fire. Doss continued to do his duty even though he suffered serious injuries during the battle, even refusing treatment so another man could be carried from the field. Desmond Doss was the first conscientious objector to be awarded the Medal of Honor for bravery. Andrew Garfield, who plays Doss in Hacksaw Ridge, says that the real-life hero models a kind of strength that is rarely seen.
What Desmond models, I think, is a new form of strength, a new form of what it is to man up, to be a man. Well, these ideas that I don't think we quite know what they mean anymore. I know for me as a young man becoming, a boy becoming a man a few years ago, I was looking for heroes to model my masculinity on. So I think Desmond's one of those people that we can look to.
Director Mel Gibson said at the film's premiere that Doss's story was one that needed to be told.
You know, toxic masculinity is this whole idea of punching somebody in the nose and winning through might. Might is right kind of thing. It's not necessarily. This man goes at it, like, with love and triumphs. And, he wins the respect of all those around him who thought he was weak and a coward, and he does things that they could never even gotten close to, just the bravery.
Teresa Palmer plays Doss's love interest, Dorothy Schuette, and says the story has the power to touch people.
It's a film with such a profound message. It has the potential to affect positive change in the world. And I just think that it's completely aligned with where Mel's at right now. And he's going to show the world like this is really putting so much of himself out there. He's got a big heart and a beautiful spirit, and I think this film speaks to that.
This is Mel Gibson's first film since Apocalypto in 2006. The director said at the premiere he believes Hacksaw Ridge delivers a great story, even though it did not have the budget of other films.
But the time dictates now that, a film that's not about a guy in spandex, you don't get the budget, you don't get the time. So you have to do what you used to do in half the time with half the money. And I feel like we really got a lot of bang for our buck on this one.
Hacksaw Ridge also stars Vince Vaughn, Sam Worthington, Hugo Weaving, and Mel Gibson's son, Milo. The film is rated R for graphic war violence. It opens in U.S. theaters November 4th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And we just would like to remind you, we know there are very popular sports taking place around the world, but here in the United States, we call it the World Series. People in Japan and other places that play baseball might not think that covers them, but we think it does. So the World Series goes into Game 3 in Chicago's Wrigley Field tonight, with the series tied at one game apiece between the Cubs and Cleveland. This is International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
India's Minister of Commerce and Industry, Nirmala Sitharaman, and U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Michael Froman met in Delhi on October 20, 2016, for the 10th ministerial-level meeting of the India and United States Trade Policy Forum, or TPF. The ministers agreed that the TPF has greatly strengthened U.S.-India engagement on bilateral trade and has increased trade and enhanced the overall economic relationship. In addition to the high-level working group on intellectual property and the manufacturing dialogue that Prime Minister Narendra Modi and President Barack Obama launched under the TPF, the forum has gained momentum with regular ministerial meetings in 2014, 2015, and 2016, supported by interministerial efforts of establishing working groups on agriculture, trade in services, and trade in goods, promoting investment in manufacturing and intellectual property. While welcoming the success of the TPF to date and that two-way bilateral goods and services trade reached $109 billion in 2015, the ministers recognized that for economies of their size, a great deal of potential remains. They acknowledged that open access to the U.S. market remains an important factor in driving trade growth and has contributed to the U.S. becoming India's top export destination. More than 15% of all India's exports go to the U.S., but India represents only 1.4% of U.S. exports, highlighting a greater potential for trade and the need for accelerating economic reforms and market opening. The United States is proud to work with its partner India to promote trade and prosperity for both nations, the Asia-Pacific region, and the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
100 hours.